Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast now in our 19th year. As always, I'm your host, Jess Marquez, and our guest today is Sean Fluharty, West Virginia legislator and president of the National Council of Legislators from Gaming States, also known as NCLGs, to talk about West Virginia's gaming boom, the underwhelming round of legislative sessions this year, and the upcoming NCLGs summer meeting. Today's GGB podcast is sponsored by Pavilion Payments, which empowers gaming institutions to create an enhanced patron experience with a complete suite of integrated payment solutions that enable safe, secure, and trusted cash access at the cage, on the casino floor, or online. Learn more at pavilionpayments.com. Since 2018, West Virginia has become one of the few markets in the U.S. to legalize both sports betting and iGaming. This is due in large part to the work of Sean Fluharty, Minority Whip in the state legislature and the president of the National Council of Legislators from Gaming States. Having championed the legalization of both verticals, Fluharty has become a key voice in the industry, especially as legislative progress was ground to a halt this spring and summer. He and I spoke via Zoom in June. Sean, thank you so much for joining me today. It is so nice, as we were just saying off air, to finally meet. We've kind of been circling each other for a long time, whether it be through NCLGs or all the other industry happening. So it's nice to finally sit down and talk with you.
Hey, you as well, man. Good to see you, and hopefully we'll see you out in the industry events going forward.
Definitely. And we didn't even, you know, we didn't even coordinate this. We both got the red shirt going on.
I saw that, yeah.
Full disclosure, we did not even rehearse that beforehand, so that was just happening.
I didn't even know this was going to be on camera, so, you know, you're lucky I'm even wearing any clothes right now.
Exactly, I know, right? It's a good thing it's only top half. So, you know, I like to start off these interviews kind of, you know, we'll get to obviously all the work details and all your work in legislative stuff, and then obviously NCLGs and so forth. But I like to kind of start by just with some personal stuff. So I know you kind of wear a lot of hats right now. You know, you're an attorney. Like I said, you're a representative in West Virginia, a lot of different things. So kind of like, you don't have to go through the whole, you know, the whole spiel, but like kind of what's your story, man? How'd you kind of get to this point? And more specifically, kind of what led you to kind of get on the gaming side of things? Because obviously West Virginia, you know, is not exactly, it's not the first thing that people think of when they think of gaming is West Virginia. So kind of how did that come about?
Hey, we're changing that, man. We got a lot of gaming going on here, but
exactly.
I think honestly, we do. Objectively, West Virginia, we have iGaming, iLottery's about to go live. We have brick and mortar. We have LVL machines and bars and restaurants. We even have Greyhound racing still going on. So we have, you know, we have all forms of gaming. So I would definitely give pushback that we are not thought of as far as one of the epicenters when it comes to the gaming industry. But I think my start actually was back in law school. I was a member of the Sports and Law and Entertainment Society at West Virginia University College of Law. I love sports. I've always been, you know, I was part of the big poker run back in the day, right? Everybody was playing on all those poker sites, and we had the poker boom in the U.S. And I've always been intrigued by PASPA and always felt it was unconstitutional. And then fast forward a few years after I get out of law school and become an elected official, two of the first pieces of legislation that I introduced were sports betting and iGaming. And the premise being, hey, look, let's raise new revenue and not taxes, and let's protect our constituents through consumer protection. So that's where it all started, honestly. And, you know, it just took off from there.
So that's interesting. And I'm sure, you know, anytime we're talking about anything like legislative related or regulatory related, like it's always so funny to me when I hear people talk about like, yeah, we did this and we did that. And it was like, it makes it sound so simple, but yet I know like behind the scenes, I'm sure it was like this like insanely arduous process, especially, you know, again, I like coming basically from nothing, you know what I mean, to like building up this big market. So kind of like, how long was that process? And how difficult was it for you to kind of gain that traction and gain that momentum that you needed to eventually, you know, open up this big marketplace that you have now? Kind of what was like the nitty-gritty like?
It was, you know, what I like about what happened in West Virginia, what I was able to build was it came completely from within, right? We didn't have lobbyists coming to West Virginia on behalf of the iGaming industry or sports betting industry. It was purely myself and a few of my colleagues who were leading the charge. And I think that's the best way to do it in any state, is to have what I call champions of legislation. Find your legislative champions that will help move the ball down the field, because that's organic. And that's the way to try to actually get legislation done. Think about how we did it in West Virginia. I was leading the way, you know, vocally going on radio and TV and saying, let's raise new revenue, not taxes. Here's how we do it. Sports betting on the one end, iGaming on the other. Let's protect our constituents from, and let's shrink the black market. We know that it's going on. And I go back to that poker, you know, analogy. We're talking about poker when I was in college. It's like, hey, people are doing these things. We're just not collecting revenue right now. And we're not protecting the consumer, those who are problem gamblers, without real regulations in place. So for all those reasons, we should move forward. But it was getting colleagues educated on the fact and really losing that apprehension to vote for a gambling bill, right? So politicians, I say the most important thing for politicians is getting reelected. That's the truth of it. In every state, in every capital you visit, that's how these things work. And you have to get that, I call it political zero, where there's no risk in pressing the green button for certain pieces of legislation. Gambling legislation already used to be that it would start on the back end. Like, it was not something that there was an appetite for. Oh, you might lose votes. It's something that's considered bad. That has completely changed for multiple reasons. One, PASPA being overturned, sports betting taking off, all the states jumping on board. It is kind of ingrained in our society, and it's not exactly a political risk anymore to support gaming expansion. And I think the same goes for iGaming. I think there's a major education gap. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But that's something that, you know, we were able to do in West Virginia because we were able to get colleagues on board, understand it. And really, we passed sports betting prior to PASPA being overturned. We were able to get on the ground level, have enacting legislation that said, if this is overturned, we're going to start right away. And that happened. And then a year later, we came back and passed iGaming. And my colleagues were, you know, successful with sports betting. They didn't get the pushback they expected to have for voting for gaming expansion. And iGaming made more sense because it was a prime example of, hey, look, we can shrink the black market and raise revenue. And you look at the revenue numbers for iGaming, it's 3-1 to 4-1 to that of sports betting. So looking at that analysis and where the money goes, like the money in West Virginia, for instance, West Virginia Lottery, our great partner here, and they regulate everything on the gaming side. But that money goes to things like the Promise Scholarship in West Virginia, which helps young people go to college at a vastly reduced rate. And you want to keep that funded as best we can, right? So at some point, if you're running low on money, you're either going to go raise revenue through increasing somebody's taxes, or you're going to get creative and find out a way to raise new revenue. And that's what iGaming represents. That's what sports betting represents.
Definitely. And, you know, we'll get to more general discussions about the kind of legislative part of it later on. But I'm interested in, like, the iGaming specifically, because, you know, it really is, I think, to people who are outside the industry, like, it really is kind of shocking how much further sports betting has exploded rather than iGaming. And there's various reasons for that, obviously, and it kind of sure. depends on which market you're talking about. But, you know, you guys really were one of the first iGaming states, and I'm kind of curious, like, how was that, like, kind of getting that ready for launch and then post-launch, like, as really one of the first, you know, non-New Jersey markets? Like, how was that process like, especially back then, which was, I think, was prior to even COVID, right?
2018.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I consider ourselves a mature state for sure. And I'm glad you mentioned New Jersey, because honestly, I don't know if we could have gotten across the finish line without New Jersey's input. You know, there's like a trio there, David Rebuck at the time, the director, Lou Rogacki and Afshin, who all are integral part of New Jersey gaming. And the best part about them is, beyond the fact they are just good guys, that, you know, they'll pick up the phone and they'll work with you. And we worked with David Rebuck and others when we were moving the legislation. And credit to a former colleague of mine who was working at West Virginia Lottery and a former law student with me at the law school, Danielle Boyd. She was general counsel at the time at West Virginia Lottery. She's now with Hard Rock Digital down there in Florida. But she, you know, as her role as general counsel, understood that, hey, look, we want to move this legislation. Let's get the framework in place because we want the assurance from the regulators that we can get this done. And if we actually pass this law, it'll be implemented and in a way that will protect the consumer, that we can actually do this. And what resources do you need? And I think that's a big issue in many states, is that you need to have the regulatory side and the legislative side working together from the very beginning. I think a lot of times the egos of legislators get in the way, right? They're like, hey, I'm going to pass this and you figure it out later. And it's like, no, we need to have be on the same page and make sure that, you know, we have the capacity to do this in a formal manner that could be well regulated, and we can implement it in a timely manner. And all of those things kind of lined up for us. But I have to give credit to New Jersey because they were absolutely fundamentally a part of what we were trying to do, and worked with us to say, hey, here are the best practices we've discovered, and we're still discovering those as we go. And that's part of what we're doing with Nickel G's, is trying to figure out what the best practices are and having those experts there to demonstrate what they actually are.
Definitely. And, you know, it's funny, being a native Nevadan myself, you know, I think we like to kind of, you know, that kind of gold standard, whatever motto that we like to use. But really, truly, you know, in my personal opinion, I think New Jersey really kind of has taken that baton in terms of this next generation of the industry. It really has been fundamental in kind of charting the right path for states like West Virginia and others, although maybe not as many as, you know, people may want, but that's another topic.
I think you're spot on, though. I think you're spot on. It's not the 80s anymore. Things
Sure.
have changed for sure.
Yeah, we're not like, you know, 50 row or 25 row machine banks of IGT machines anymore. You know, we're kind of different than that. So let's get into Nickel G's a little bit. This is you guys have got your summer meeting coming up. We'll get to that, but kind of how'd you even really get involved with Nickel G's and kind of I mean, obviously it's a gaming legislative council, so it makes sense, but I mean, now
Sure.
that you are your president, so kind of how did that relationship come about?
So when I was first elected, like I said, I introduced iGaming and sports betting legislation early in my legislative career, started pushing that, started pushing the narrative and saying, hey, look, this is something we need to do, and learned of Nickel G's through that process. Obviously, they reach out to legislators, and just the fact that I was introducing legislation was something that put it on the radar, and started going to meetings. You know, obviously they meet 2 times a year, and became a regular member at these meetings and learning from those who have been doing it for a number of years and discovering those best practices. So, I mean, I learned of it organically just by, you know, pushing gaming legislation and then realizing that this important entity was out there, this association of legislators and the regulators who were involved as well. And, you know, that was probably back in probably 2016 or so. It's been a long time ago. And it's fun watching it evolve and grow, and it's an honor to serve as the president now. And it's something that I take seriously. And as I said before we hopped on the call, it's not a paid position, it's not a full-time position, but as you get closer to the conferences, you certainly feel like it starts taking up some of the time. But love all the people involved, and you meet so many great leaders throughout the country. And we talked about earlier, champions on legislation. I don't care what you're trying to pass, you need somebody on the ground who is actually championing the issue. And on the gaming space, if you're going to find a legislative champion, you're going to find them at a Nickel G's conference. That's all there is to it. Like, no matter what state it is, you're going to find the decision maker, the one person, or maybe more, who are attending, who are going to say, yeah, we'll take this issue and we're going to get it down the field and make sure we do it the right way. And it's, you know, you can go to all kinds of different legislative conferences. There's SLC coming up shortly in West Virginia, there's NCSL, there's all of these things. But there's only one group that is defined for gaming, right? And it not necessarily pro gaming either. Like, we try to put the best practices out there. We essentially say, here are the states that are doing it. These are the things we've learned from, the good, the bad, the ugly. Let's get it out there so that we can learn from it as we go and make sure that we have a framework in place in states that they're doing it the right way. And that's kind of what our goal is. And now that I'm 8 years in or more with the association, it's something that's growing, and we're continuing to, try to make it bigger and better and provide that information for our members.
I think, yeah, and I think Nickel G's, it represents such an interesting kind of place in the show schedule of the industry, right? Because everybody, like, the shows are the show kind of circuit is like such a necessary, I don't want to call it necessary evil, but like everybody, you know, it's like there's so much work that goes into them, and like they're so big and such grand, and like, you know, everybody comes in for these big things. But I think Nickel G's, it like represents such a kind of refreshing. It's smaller, it's much more focused, and you have like all of these like super influential people within the industry at these shows that really kind of go under the radar as compared to like the G2Es of the world, the ICEs of the
Sure.
world, you know, and things. But they really are, in terms of like actual like people who are really affecting, impacting the industry, they're all pretty much concentrated in this one area. So that's what makes it great. And it's funny that
That's spot on.
And it's funny that I'm telling you this as I told you that I will be probably the only one from us that won't be there.
And
So
you're no-showing us. You're
I
no-showing
know.
us in Pittsburgh.
So that just shows you where, you know, what kind of person I am. But
You're absolutely right, though. Like, you're not only going to be able to meet the decision makers, you're going to be able to actually have conversations with them. And then we're going to go through, especially in Pittsburgh coming up, with what we're working on. You know, we're talking about model legislation practices. So we're going to start off with iGaming, but we're not going to end there. We're going to try to be a good framework. You know, all these other groups out there seem to follow the model of you should have set guidelines and best practices in place. And that's what we're trying to do. And that's where I think that's important work, because it can serve as a catalyst to get legislation moving, and at the same time serve as kind of a penultimate of getting the best ideas together in one place, as you mentioned, and building off each other. I think there's one thing that's been an issue in the gaming industry. It's collaboration. Like I mentioned that we collaborated with New Jersey to learn how to get our iGaming bill passed and know that we could get it done. But if you're not collaborating in this space right now, you're sitting on an island and you're putting yourself out there, and that doesn't breed success. And I think from the legislative side, you need collaboration amongst states, from the mature states like a West Virginia and a Pennsylvania. And then you also, your members that are in states that are looking to do it need to have that collaboration. But on the regulatory side as well, now legislators are the direct members of Nickel G's, but I'd be hard pressed to bypass the fact that many regulators will be on our panels and dropping their expertise for everybody and also collaborating. So it's kind of like the unique situation. You could go to these larger group, they do a great job, your G2Es and everything, but you're good. Every hand you shake there is not the same type of decision making hand you're going to shake at Nickel G's.
Exactly. Yeah, I was just thinking in my head about like how many times have I been and I love my job, but you know, how many times have I been at a panel or at some kind of speaking event or something like that, and it's like these people, they'll be like three people from various companies. They all have some sort of title with like you know, regulatory affairs or some kind of thing in their title, and they say something that you write down, and it's like, okay, but nobody, you know, everyone kind of rolls their eyes and they say, okay, you know, it's like, what do they say? Like, if you're going to forecast often, right? So, and then you come back 6 months later for the next show and it's like three different people who have like the same, you know what I mean? So, like I said, I think definitely in terms of impact, in terms of decision making, I think Nickel G's kind of stands alone in that respect. So, we've kind of been dancing around it a little bit, but just kind of directly, like, obviously, we've said the summer meeting, Bet River at Rivers Casino in Pittsburgh, July 17th through 20th. Kind of what's like, what's your goal for for that week? Kind of what's the big picture items you guys got going on?
Well, I think the biggest thing we have is we're going to put our draft model legislation out there in the July conference. Now we have a committee put together. We're still having those meetings. We're getting ideas from industry leaders and, you know, trying to bring that all just like you would in the legislature, right? You have a committee process, you bring all the ideas to a table, you get a draft bill together. People, you know, have the committee meeting. We talk about it, put things in, take things out. We're still in that process. And here in a few weeks, we'll have a final product that we can disseminate in July and go over kind of the framework. Like every state's different. There are nuances to every state, and I'll be the first to say that getting a bill passed in one state does not exactly work in another state. However, the framework of the iGaming piece, we can find things that most people agree on as a best practice, and let's put that in place and then kind of give recommendations on the outside on the second tier of that. And that's what we're hoping to do, and that's what we're hoping to do in Pittsburgh. And we're going to have a 30-day period following Pittsburgh for public comment to the actual draft legislation. And so we hope to have that all together and then a final piece, because the idea is you want to be able to get things to members prior to the next legislative session opening up so that they have something that they can take with them back to their districts and say, okay, here's a framework on what a bill should look like based upon experts who have no skin in the game coming together and saying, this is how we do it in New Jersey, this is how we do it in Pennsylvania, and this is what has worked for us. And we think this is the framework that should be as part of the model. So that's the number one goal of our unveiling of model legislation. And what I think, what I'm trying to do as president, as you mentioned, going to conferences and it's kind of the same thing. It's just like wash, rinse, repeat. I'm trying not to do that. We want to talk about things that are front and center. For instance, we're going to have a panel with sports bettors. And that's something that's a hot button issue. We're talking about limiting players and the practices of sports books. Something that hasn't really been discussed very thoroughly. I feel like As I've said, every bill that has come out on the sports betting side is an industry-driven one because there's no lobbying group for the bettors themselves. I'll give you a prime example. We passed sports betting in West Virginia. We had zero discussion at the time on, for example, deducting your losses as you can on the federal level, right? But not at the state level. I had a bettor reach out to me. He sent me an email, and he essentially said, let me give you an example of how I think this is a flawed, flawed accounting practice, right? So he sends it to me, and he had like a big win, but he had to deduct that. Well, he had all these losses as well, but he couldn't deduct the losses. He couldn't account for them. So I shot it through to a few accountants locally and said, hey, take a look at this. It looks like he has a good point, but you're the experts here. And their immediate response was, he's right. Federally, you're able to do these things. But point being, that was not discussion because nobody was there on behalf of the bettor at the time that we were pushing legislation. So I want to have that, let's have those conversations at Nickel G's and other places to say everybody deserves a seat at the table. And at the same time, it's something that's different. It will drive people to pay more attention to what's going on at Nickel G's, drive attendance up, and just have the front and center issues. In Fort Lauderdale, for example, we had a major panel related to the fantasy sports side where we had Prize Picks and Underdogs and the controversy that's going on there. That's new. That's something that people want to discuss. And so I want to take the front page of GGB and say, this is what they're discussing. Why aren't we discussing it at our conference? And tell me why we can't. And usually it's, well, we probably could. All right, then why the hell aren't we? Let's go. So that's kind of the theory behind it. And that's what we're going to do in Pittsburgh. And it's not going to stop there. In December, we head to New Orleans. And we will pick up those conversations and, try to have something entertaining for everybody. I will say for those who are on the fence about Pittsburgh, we're going to have access to PNC Park for the Pirates game. And we're also going to be touring Acrisure Stadium where the Steelers play, which they changed the name. I mean, it's always Heinz Field. It will always be Heinz Field to me. But it's Acrisure now, and we're going to be touring Acrisure Stadium for the attendees who are here. So you get to go one of the best parks in all of baseball's PNC Park. I will fight people in the streets over that argument. It is an incredible stadium, and you're going to get to go to Acrisure. So it's all right there in the same complex in Pittsburgh, and I think it's a great opportunity for those who are on the fence about attending.
Definitely, yeah, and I know that Pittsburgh native Frank Legato is somewhere like rubbing his hands like an evil villain right now. He can't wait to get down there. So yeah, definitely, like I said, July 17th through 20th, very excited to see. As I've said, unfortunately, I will not be there, but I cannot wait to see the coverage that comes out of it and the stuff that we have for our channels on that. So to kind of broaden the scope out a little bit, and we've touched on these topics a little bit, but I'm really curious to get your take on some of these topics as an actual legislator who's actually having these conversations. And honestly too, like touching back on the example you gave with the bettor, like it's kind of an interesting look at like how these things, like these conversations, these things move, because I think at least I can speak from my end, like I think sometimes we get a little bit cynical in the world and we're like, we only see like the bad stuff, and we're like, no, actually, like these things are like real conversations between real people that can actually impact change and kind of move things forward. So I think that's important to definitely keep in mind. But as we get back to the topics at hand, this past round of legislative sessions, I mean, boy, oh boy, it was, I don't know, it was painful for the industry. I know that there was a lot of hope coming into it in various markets, both for on sports betting side and an iGaming side in some certain states. I'm not really want to get into like specific states, but just generally speaking, like it just really wasn't a successful summer for gaming overall. Sure. On the legislative side, especially if you kind of compare that to the last 5 years that we had, where it seemed like every week I was writing a story about a new state and something new, and now it was like kind of all seemed to kind of grind a little bit to a halt over the last few months. So how do you personally reflect on this past summer, and kind of, I'm sure that, you talk to other legislators all the time around the country. So kind of what has been kind of like the takeaways from this summer? Like, how do you reflect on that?
Well, I think there's multiple reasons. Things that jump out to me at first is a lot of states were still what I would call budget heavy. They didn't need the money. You know, if that makes sense, like they're, we had a lot of COVID money that was kind of left over in many states. And when you're looking at it, you're looking to fill budget holes, this was not something that was contemplated. And I think a bigger issue, which is I think the industry has really failed to properly narrate is that they were complacent in thinking sports betting took off and sports betting was just an easy lift. You have constituents who reach out to you about sports betting and say, pass sports betting after PASPA was overturned. It's ingrained in our society and everybody gets it. You don't necessarily get that with iGaming. Now you do once you can accurately tell a constituent how much money is raised, and that's an option over raising your taxes, but you got to get in the weeds on that. So there's not the general consensus of we want this from the public. And the politicians react to the public, so the public needs to get on board. That hasn't happened yet. And to the second end, the education gap with legislators, I believe, is immense when it comes to iGaming. I say this all the time. I have colleagues who struggle to mute their phones in a committee meeting. And now we're going to tell them we're going to have iGaming on their phone itself. Okay, that's not an easy sell in many states. And let's start, if you really want to boil it down, legislative leadership moves legislation. What I mean by that is they are responsible for putting bills on the agenda. If I want a bill on the judiciary agenda, you have to go to the judiciary chairman to get it on or go to the leadership team. So in these states, a handful of individuals make that call. Most of those individuals, and I hate to sound ageist at all, but are older and don't fully comprehend iGaming and how it works. So it's hard to get something like that just on the agenda in general, which goes back to the beginning of our call. You have to have a legislative champion who is not taking no for an answer and is actually explaining why it's good legislation. So all of those factors, if we would have had this interview a year ago, I would have told you this is going to be a slow summer for iGaming. And I would have said, for those reasons I just spoke about, and also last year during legislative sessions is an election year. So think about that. You don't want to move the waters too much on the boat when it's an election year. That's just how it works in the United States. So you weren't going to have legislation running that could be deemed, oh, this is dangerous if I support it. I may lose votes if I support this. So it was a bad year all around for any gambling legislation. It just so happens iGaming was the one front and center, but you weren't going to see much on other ends as well. I didn't even see sports betting get passed much places this past summer, right? Georgia, it blew up in smoke. I mean, there's all kinds of states that are looking at it. Even Mississippi couldn't get across the finish line, and they have the iGaming, not the iGaming, but the mobile gaming committee that they formed. That was tasked with making recommendations, made the recommendations, still couldn't get across the finish line. So there are all these factors in place. I do think next legislative cycle, things are changing. More states are going to need revenue. I believe it was 14 plus states. They're going to be a budget negative in their fiscal years going forward that don't currently have iGaming. So take those 14 states, they are now in play. So these are things that I think we'll be looking at, and you're going to see a change in the next coming years. But this year in particular, to your original question, was a bad year all around. The industry needs to focus on finding their legislative champions and shrinking that education gap so that the colleagues can get on board with it. And I think there was this mentality that, oh, look what we did with sports betting. We're going to do the same with iGaming. And it is not easy. You have to get the votes. And, we did it in West Virginia, but like I said, it was organic. We did not have outside pressure. And now you're looking at states that are kind of needing the outside pressure to get it done. So it's a formula currently for failure, but I believe things are changing.
I would agree. I think that's really well said, and I think there's several things that it makes me think about. Like I think myself coming into the industry about like 2.5 years ago, it's been so weird. Like I talk to people, I always refer to like experts and people who have really been around for decades, and I'm like ask them like, am I crazy or is this like a weird time to be in the industry, right? Where like you had like basically that it was the same thing from like inception up until a certain point, maybe like 2018, I guess you want to call it the demarcation point. And then you have this whole other world where it's like, oh, we're just going. Like it's like boom, 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 we're just going. And then all of a sudden you have a year like this year where it's like, okay, maybe that's another demarcation point where it's like now things are gonna be like a lot different. Like I remember having conversations with, a couple operators and sports betting operators about how like, yeah, we've kind of exhausted our kind of like point and shoot, strategy, and now we're kind of really having to like really get like individual markets. Like, what's it going to take for this specific market as opposed to just like cut and paste? And I think like when I think about the education part of it too, I think that that's like such a a big part of this that maybe people like outside the industry, because like we're kind of a tight-knit group, right? Like I think we can kind of get pigeonholed and like thinking like, well, everybody should know what this is and everybody knows exactly
100%.
what it is. But it really isn't. And I think back to, and I've shared this on the podcast before, but I remember I have this interaction with my eye doctor. I mean, I have pretty, I need a pretty good eye doctor, but I was talking to him and I was telling him what I do. And I'm in California, mind you. And he's like, oh, so you mean like, you know, sports betting and like online gambling? I was like, yeah, you know, we cover that. And he was like, well, it's legal here, isn't it? And I'm like, no, like,
exactly.
Of course it isn't, you know, and this is a guy who, like, I'm sure is, like, very, probably pretty active politically, you know, is very, like, you know, all these different things. So I think that is a big part of it. And the other thing, too, with regards to, like, the politicians themselves, like, I think back to, like, the images I have in my mind is, like, you know, the congressional hearings with, like, Facebook and Twitter and stuff, you know, when they're, like, you know, you get the questions of they're, like, so can I do the, you know, if, is this,
exactly,
you know, and, yeah. And it's kind of right along with that. So I think you really orchestrated that really, really well. I think that like it points to a lot of the factors that are kind of contributing to this.
Yeah, that it certainly is. And especially that, and I'll tell you what, I was in Maryland recently when they were moving their legislation. And this is something if I was trying to move legislation, I certainly would make this part of it. In West Virginia, we passed just this past session, a bill of mine, which was related to, data in the education system. So we are now going to provide data to West Virginia University, a tier one research institution that can, you know, for consumer protection purposes and things that we didn't think about when we passed it a few years ago. But I was at Morgan State and they are trying to do the same thing. They already get the data on the sports betting side. And if Maryland goes live with iGaming, Morgan State certainly wants to be part of that as well. And I think it's great. You know, the more data going to our research institutions, and the more evidence we have for consumer protections is a no-brainer. Every piece of iGaming legislation should contemplate that. And I don't think we did years ago, but we went back and fixed it in West Virginia. But I pulled out my phone as I was there, and I was speaking on a panel, and I just searched online casinos. And all these casinos pop up, and one was called Cafe Casino. And there were legislators in a room, and I was like, can you tell me how much Cafe Casino is paying in taxes to the state of Maryland? Well, the answer is zero, right? Can you tell me how much they actually care about the consumer? That if you are, you know, betting inappropriately, we're going to flag it and make sure that you're not putting your life savings in there? No. So, like, the market is there. It's untaxed, untapped, and we're not protecting anybody. Now, will that market grow if we go fully legal and you're seeing advertising for it? Are you going to bring players in who aren't currently playing? Sure. But to say that it's not already happening, it's legal in all states right now. Nobody's getting prosecuted for it. That's for damn sure. So it's legal. You can play it, but it's not tax regulated. It's not on the radar. And it's something that's like at some point, every legislator, whether you understand it or not, can look at and say, wait a minute, we should probably shrink that black market. We should probably raise some revenue. We should probably protect our people and, you know, and do this in a structured manner instead of just letting the Wild West take place in the black market.
Sure. And, you know, that enforcement and prosecution part of it is such an interesting piece. I don't think I don't want to touch on that so much today because, you know, I'm sure we could talk about that in the future.
Yeah.
It's definitely going to be an issue for the foreseeable future. I wanted to touch on one more thing in regards to, you mentioned Maryland, and Maryland was kind of the hot spot this year for the debate, which has kind of been raging for a while now, and depending on like who you talk to or which, you know, advisory firm you hire, you know, it's like everybody, it's very strong opinions one way or the other with regards to cannibalization in terms of iGaming and land-based gaming. Now, I'm also, this is another thing I'm really interested to hear your opinion on, because you obviously in a state that has both, you have racinos, physical racinos and iGaming. Was cannibalization like, was that even like a thought on the radar when you guys were kind of like going through this? And how much has that kind of dominated the conversation since? And that's another thing where I'm sure people, you know, other colleagues of yours have kind of like broached
it,
sure, because it has become a big issue, which maybe
it was
not so much.
It was contemplated when we passed iGaming legislation, which in large part led to us tethering our licenses to the brick and mortar, right? And that's a formula that I think every state will follow if they have brick and mortar casinos. I can tell you, I have a brick and mortar casino in my district. If there was cannibalization going on, they would pick up the phone and be screaming in my ear immediately. Yeah, and to your point about you're hearing all these expert analysis, and I think it's going to come down to this. So we're having a battle of the experts at some point, right? You got these reports coming out, and I spent 12 years plus in a courtroom as an attorney, a trial attorney, and I could go hire an expert to say, based on this set of facts, this happened, and then the defense could go set hire an expert and say, based upon these facts, this happened. But you know what usually happens to the jury is they listen to the fact witnesses and not the expert witnesses. And what I mean by that is we have fact witnesses now. We have New Jersey and Pennsylvania and Michigan, and all the regulators in those areas will tell you there's no cannibalization taking place. New Jersey, in particular, David Rebuck came out and said, I've been doing this a long time. You were crazy. And Kevin O'Toole said the same thing. He's going to say the same thing in Pittsburgh at Nickel G's. You know, there are battles out there. And in West Virginia, not only do we have brick and mortar casinos, we have VGTs, or they're LVLs in West Virginia, but we have those as well. So they were part of the fight. They're like, well, you're going to take away from our revenue. And what we usually discover is you bring in a new player, right? There might be some cross play. Like, I'm one of those that I would prefer actually sitting in the brick and mortar instead of playing a slot on my small phone. But will I not do that? No, I will still do that, but I'm not necessarily displacing the opportunity to go to a brick and mortar. And these casinos now are adapting and evolving with the times and making it more of an entertainment space than just a gambling space. And what you're finding in most states, when you get into the data, which, like I said, I'd rather talk to the people on the ground, but when you do get in the data, they're making more money now in states with iGaming than previously before. In a state like Pennsylvania, they opened up multiple brick and mortar casinos after passing iGaming. If you're going to tell me cannibalization is taking place, don't tell me you're also opening more brick and mortar casinos. So I know that was an argument in Maryland. I believe there are six casinos in Maryland. Only two, I believe, actually came out against iGaming. So the majority of brick and mortars in Maryland even support iGaming. They're just not necessarily the loudest. So that's how, but look, that can be effective when you talk about getting votes and getting things across the finish line. That's why tethering to the casinos is important. And I think, you know, if I was going to do it over again, I would even consider a modernization aspect. We have modernization language in West Virginia, where a sliver of money comes back to the casinos for them to modernize their games, right? So the casino floor is getting constantly refreshed. And I think you're going to see a potential in the iGaming legislation going forward as it evolves to say that we're going to cap, you know, a certain revenue point, and then a sliver of that's going to go back to the brick and mortars for modernization of the casinos itself. You know, that's something just kind of thinking out loud as we talk about model legislation. It's like that actually makes sense. We have kind of a version of that in West Virginia. It assures that we're not going to leave the brick and mortars in the dust. It allows for technological advances. I mean, we're advancing, right? And so the idea that people aren't playing is a fallacy. They are. And we got to move with the times. And as a legislator, when you look at it and say, wait a minute, am I going to just look at this and say, well, we can never have iGaming because it's going to hurt the brick and mortar? But there's really no evidence to back that up in states that have it. That's going to win the day at the end, I think.
I think it's just such a fascinating topic because it kind of is like a snapshot of like the industry as a whole, right? And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, and like this is such an interesting time for the industry, not just in moving into like new mediums and new forms of betting, but also just like your demographic is changing. And I think that's like been such a fascinating conversation for someone like myself. I mean, I'm not exactly, I mean, I'm 26, I'm not like, you know, 18, but like it's something that I kind
Man, you're a pup. You're a
of, I
young
know.
guy.
I know, and I try to you know I try to kind of like use that perspective when I talk to some of these folks around the industry, where it's like, you know, I might be talking to like a table games manufacturer, and they're telling me about all these new things that they're doing to kind of like introduce new people to the games. I'm like, man, I don't know if anyone my age knows how to play craps. You know what I mean? Like, it's like it goes deeper. It's a deeper problem than just like, you know, making new products. I think you're seeing this full unfold in real time, this demographic shift where it's like it's not exactly the 60-year-old retired you know, woman playing slots. Like that's winning the day still, but it's not going to win tomorrow, and it's not going to win next year and down the road. So I think it really is representative of like the growing pains that the industry is going through as a whole.
Sure. And it makes sense for them to partner up in this venture, right? You know, partner up and go down the road together instead of just trying to fight the inevitability of what's come. And then what happens from a legislative perspective is you fight, 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 and then at some point it's getting passed, and either you're part of it or you're on the sideline, and that's the last place you want to be.
And that's the other thing too, where it's like, you know, you see some of these examples where it's like, you know, the story comes out, it's like, well, it didn't get passed. And then, you know, it didn't get passed the next state, or it didn't go through. And then you're kind of like, okay, well, we'll be back in 18 months or 24 months or whatever it is. And then, you know, if it doesn't pass, yeah, then we'll be back in 24 months. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, like you said, it's not going anywhere. It'll
yeah,
come down the road eventually. It's just kind of a matter of making those pieces fit.
But that goes to your, like, the point of how hard it is to get done. Look at the states and how much time you have to pass a bill. In West Virginia, we have a 60-day session. Most states are between 60 and 90 days. There's a few at 120 if you're a part-time legislature. Good luck getting anything across the finish line if you can't find some sort of agreement, especially if the industry comes in fractured. It makes it hard, but you only have so much time to get it done. And other states that are full-time, different story. But for the majority of states, you got a small window and you got to hit the ground running.
Definitely. And, you know, the extremely, like, I'm sure people from like Europe and Australia and other places, like, they look at our market where it's like these 50 puzzle pieces that like are entirely different worlds. It's like, man, this seems like really complicated. It's complicated for me and I live here. So it's definitely a strange time. I have one more bonus question for you. And this has been a great conversation. Again, thank you so much for taking the time.
Sure.
I think this has been great. This one is for you personally. I know you're a big West Virginia guy. You're a diehard Mountaineer. If you had to choose, if you had to go to a casino and gamble with either Bob Huggins or Dana Holgorsen, which one would you pick?
Well, funny story about that. Dana Holgorsen, when he was coach at WVU, got kicked out of a casino while coach. That casino is Wheeling Casino that I represent. So he was booted out. I don't know how much play it got at the time. But look, between the two, I got to go with Huggy Bear.
Sure.
You know, I got to go with Huggy Bear. He's going to have the better war stories. Dana's going to drink more Red Bull and vodkas probably. But, you know, I'm going to go with Huggy Bear. I mean, he's an icon in West Virginia. And I can't go away from him. But Dana, Dana left. He wasn't in, you know, one of us, they say, right? But I always enjoyed Dana. He seemed like a great guy to hang out with, and I'm sure he'd be a good time. So he might actually win more at the casino, but I'd probably go with Huggy Bear first.
Sure. No, I could see that. I think, like, they both fit, like, the kind of, like, the casino, like, you could both easily see them, like, in a casino for different reasons, but I see Huggy Bear as more of, like, posted up at a slot with the same chair that he always used to sit on, you know, with like the tracksuit. You know, I think he'd fit right in. And I'm sure, like, I wouldn't doubt if, you know, he might have been in an establishment or two in his time there. But anyway, that was just something at the end there. Sean, thank you so much. It's been great. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
All right, man. Good seeing you. Appreciate it. Anytime.
Thanks for joining us on the GGB podcast, sponsored by Pavilion Payments, the industry's leading cashless payment provider. To learn more about the topics discussed today and all the important issues in gaming, check out Global Gaming Business Magazine. For a free virtual copy of the magazine, subscribe at ggbmagazine.com. To stay current with the weekly news of the gaming industry, subscribe to ggbnews.com. Use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss a single episode of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on Amazon, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast.